right. Here we are. Oh, let me get away from that.
Dr. Richard! Hello, darling. I'm just now seeing you. Wonderful to have you here. So, before we get started, I want you to meet someone. Mark, get your camera ready. This is going to be a photo op, Caesar. I'd like to call forward Julius. There's somebody new in the West Valley, and we've been working up to a formal introduction, and I don't know why today needed to be the day, but maybe. It's a perfect day.
All right,
let me get it. Do this. Without laughing. So this is Clyde Goins, and he's been hanging out with us for a couple of months, I'm going to guess. And he's a very special gift to us. Actually, he knows Michael Gott. He comes from the same. It'll give you bonus points if they know that. He comes from the same center in Dallas as Michael Gott, and so they were all there at the same time. And boy, I bet Michael. Does Michael know you're? Well, let me announce that first. So what's really cool about Clyde being here is that he's a licensed practitioner. But yes, so it gives us yet again another practitioner. And you may have noticed he stood up at the new member ceremony. But the really exciting thing that I want to tell you is he is also a senior in the School of Ministry. So this is his, you know, it's a big accomplishment. Hey, the message is kind of about you today. I'm thinking it's kind of about this kind of accomplishment. And so this is his last year in the School of Ministry, and he comes with this wealth of fresh information and the excitement that happens while we're in school. And I have a passion for my memories connected to my education in our seminary, we called it Holmes Institute. I don't think we're calling it that anymore, or is it still Holmes Institute?
Education for Spiritual Leaders.
Yes, School of Spiritual, I forget what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've made some changes since. Are you working on your master's degree?
Yeah.
Also? Yay, good for you. It's a real privilege to earn a master's degree. The master's degrees, they present us as a master's in consciousness studies. So it's impressive. And what they've done recently is they've opened our school to people who are not in the studies of the science of mind or religious science. So what's going to happen in the next few years is it's going to evolve into, I think it'll be an even more prestigious title to have completed studies through that program. So there will be people attending school who will not even intend to take a pulpit or be a minister. And we look forward to seeing what unfolds for you. And I'm so grateful you're here. I'm so grateful that Spirit continues to bless the West Valley with such consciousness and authority. So welcome, Clyde. We're happy to have you. And Clyde will be, because Clyde's in the School of Ministry, he's also required to meet a lot of internship requirements. And so he's going to be helping me with the stewardship program next month. So I wanted to be sure you were up close and personal with him. And he's a really fun guy. If you haven't met him, seek him out because he's still, plug your ears. He's still a little shy. He's still got that little bashful thing going on as he's settling in. So let's love him up and make him feel welcome here. I'm very happy to have your view and your, in every way you'll be assisting us. I'm grateful. Thank you. So push him back, way back. I got this little football theme going on. There's a couple of reasons. One is primarily I'm wrapping up today that book I've been speaking out of, The Art of Life. It's a sweet little read by the founder of religious science, Ernest Holmes. And I've been speaking out of it for several weeks now. I took my material from chapter 11, and then next week we're going to start something brand new and fresh. But I found this quote while I was reading the chapter, and it said, "Push your thought up through every obstruction, and your sense of depression and fear will fade away. Push your thought up." And I immediately just heard those words, push him back. So he's saying push your thoughts up to blast away any obstructions, and I'm going to take a different little play on it, that we want to push back in the same way that we're pushing up, we're pushing back the negative thoughts. Do you know, I read this week that, do you know when we're just sitting in the privacy of our own little mind, which can be dangerous when you're in there all alone, for some of us, do you know what we think about most? Do you know what researchers say we think about the most?
Sex.
Oh. I don't even know how I want to respond to that, but you're close. Researchers say we think about ourselves. And you know, that would be okay if we were thinking about ourselves with some conviction for how beautifully divine we are and how we're born with all these innate divine characteristics, and the purpose of life is to just reveal more peace and more love and more joy in our living. Tap into that divine power. But no, we don't do that. We think about ourselves often in comparison to everybody else, and in a way in which we think we're just not good enough. And you know how I feel about that. I'm not for that at all. So I love this idea that if we push our thought, in other words, and we talked about this last week, if we consciously use our thought to move to that place of experiencing higher thoughts, then what happens is it doesn't matter what you're thinking about. There's sort of this way that it eliminates that. We rise our thinking. We have our thinking rise above the way we have been sort of playing down average or less than average. What I didn't mention was that quote that I just read is actually a really long, I think it's like a whole paragraph. And in the middle of that, Ernest Holmes actually said that the way to put your thought up is by using the ideas that you have read in this book. So I don't think you need to run out and buy that book, but I do believe that in all the writings of Ernest Holmes and so many other amazing authors, I notice that I am uplifted. You know, it is the way we can be blessed and inspired and return to that place of being grateful for our lives in the way we focus our thought on positive things. And that, by the way, is the way we are big for God. So our approach to spiritual practice is what I want to look at today. And it's a lot like being an athlete. And I thought that I would dress up like I'm not really very sportsy, you know. I really like pretty high heels, I do. And I can't throw that ball, you know, I'm just such a girl. And that's okay, I love that part of who I am. Unless Hugh's under the weather, then it sucks. You know, then I have to rise and do things I'd rather not do. But what the thing about an athlete is that athletes train, athletes have to practice, and these are good guidelines for us on the spiritual path. And so I want to have a little discussion about the similarity between the spiritual path and that rigorous training that an athlete, especially a professional athlete, what a professional athlete would go through. Can I just hear some rah-rahs in the back there? Where did the, there they are. Go, team, go. Rah-rah. Okay. So there's something interesting. As I was pondering all of this, that's enough. Thank you. It's lovely. Thank you, honey. There's something about the season right now. Halloween officially happens on the last day of the month. And then what happens the next day? We step into November. And what happens in November? Thanksgiving and a whole lot of football. Now, many of you are already traveling that bypath of being a great spiritual seeker and a football fan at the same time, right? I see a lot of nodding, and I believe even Reverend Cheryl is probably back there nodding. Yes, amen. And so there's something interesting that happens in my house at this time of year, and that is that football and baseball collide. Right? Because what's happening in baseball? Playoffs? Are we still doing playoffs? Whoa! The playoff games are done, so we're stepping into World Series now. Biggest event of the year. Who's playing, by the way? I missed that. Ooh. Oh, the Mets and the Royals. Nice. That'll be a fun game. I think we'll like that at my house. We would have liked it better with a little West Coast action in there. But anyhow, we got the World Series. But we're also really gearing up for the ball games, right? So we do a lot of sports at my house, and I practice patience, and I practice loving kindness as much as possible, and I'm so busy, it really doesn't matter. It works for us. But I want us to tap into that wisdom that corresponds spiritual as well as the athletic training and practicing and all of that. Now, I'm not a great sports fan, but I know some things about football because I was on the drill team in high school. And if you're going to be in the drill team, and I would have liked to have been a cheerleader, but I wasn't that popular. So I did drill team where you try out in front of a panel, you know, and then if your skills are good enough, they select you to be on the team, or just if there's a low number of people trying out, I guess everybody gets to be. And in my day in drill team, we didn't play with those tall flags, and we didn't twirl anything, and we didn't have pom-poms. We did the real thing. I still can remember some of my routines, man. You know, they're just like boom, boom, and you cheer. You sit in the stands, and the cheerleaders at the football games are looking at you because you're the loud voice in the stadium. And who does the drill team sit with? The band, yes. So if you don't like a lot of noise, well, I don't know why you'd go to a football game if you don't like a lot of noise, but you don't want to sit next to the band or the drill team because we're sort of charged up to be the spirit that's sitting in the crowd. And so you do all those cheers, and so first they have to teach you what they all mean. So first and 10, do it again. And you learn that, ooh, first down is a good thing. And if we go 10 yards in the right direction, we get another first down. You know, so you have to learn that stuff. And then we had to learn, push them back, way back. You know, that's when the other team has the ball and they're getting pretty close to the end zone, and it's possible they might score a touchdown, and you want to stop them from that. Was that right, Mark? Okay, good. Whew, I didn't Hugel all this information, so I'm not kind of out on a limb here. So we learned that so we could cheer in a proper way, and of course learn to root for the proper team as well, because that matters. So when I'm looking at this idea of push them back, we're looking at pushing back the negative thoughts, so that, as we said in the opening quote, we can get the old negative ideas, the thought patterns, to be replaced. We can remove any obstructions that might be standing in the way, and usually those are our hidden beliefs. And in that way, our fear, any fear we have, just begins to fade away. It's a lovely thing the way it all works. And this is a wonderful teaching that keys in on all of that. I like to say, it used to be a bumper sticker. I haven't seen them. It was a license plate frame. Science of mind, a faith, a philosophy, a way of life. And that's what we do here. That's what we are as an organization. We are indeed a faith, and we are a spiritual philosophy that's based in ancient wisdom. We call it new thought, so that it reminds us to have those new thoughts. And we teach spiritual tools in an extremely practical way. And we focus all our attention on education. So every Sunday when you come here, you have an opportunity to hear something educational. We offer classes and workshops, and we encourage lots of different ways of thinking about these eternal truths, because we sit in, I'm sorry, some of the costumes are making me laugh, because we sit in principle. We stand for principle. We stand for truth, and every individualized soul has an opportunity to interpret that and live that truth in the way that you desire it. So one of the things I've noticed about life is that there are a lot of changes in life. And recently, Hugh was watching baseball. Actually, I think he was watching ESPN, and I happened to be in the room, and there was an incident on the baseball field. I think it was just last week. You may have heard about it. One of the guys, somebody we really liked, or we liked the other guy, I don't remember. Somebody was taking the bases, and when he got close to second base, the shortstop had jumped in to cover the base because the second baseman was somewhere else, and the runner did one of those forceful slides and hit the shortstop in such a way that he jumped up in the air and fell backwards, and he actually broke his leg. And it's a great shame with the World Series. Was that a team that was impacted by the, how did they? Yeah, it was. So that's how married couples after 44 years communicate. Was that you? Half a sentence, right? We know you have no idea what just happened. It's okay. So because of that, as Hugh was watching the ESPN thing, what I noticed was that all these official people are talking about what needs to change now, that some kind of a new pattern has developed, and the players have seemed to caught on to this way of sliding and really looking to, like it's not an accident. And so it recently happened to the catcher, and they made a new regulation. They changed the laws a little bit because a new pattern begins to develop, and maybe it's not the highest and best interest of baseball as a game. So whether or not you're for all the rules and regulation, and by the way, most of us here don't like rules much anyhow, so, I get that. But things happen in life that will pull our attention to an old pattern or maybe a new pattern or an old pattern that of a behavior in our own life that an old pattern in our life that now is not serving us. It's leading us down a path that is not going to be for the highest and the best of our own good. None of us really like change, but sometimes change is necessary, and certainly it pays for us to review the rules or the spiritual laws every now and then and see if we're aligned to them. And that's why we teach and have classes and talk about this stuff on Sunday mornings. You know, one of the biggest things that's changed in baseball, a little bit in football too, but you know what the biggest thing that I think is the biggest change in baseball in recent years? They're all so hairy now. Have you noticed that? They are all so hairy. Now, I hang out with a bunch of, we do the Harley thing. We got bikers in our life, and I'm accustomed to a beard. But bikers are so much tidier about their beards. I don't know, maybe it's the wind and all that. But biker keeps their beard in, but these baseball players are looking, it's very strange. I feel bad for the guys that don't have enough facial hair to get in the club, you know. But anyhow, they're hairier now, and long hair and things that my father, when my father was still living, used to often complain about, like, yeah, they shouldn't be wearing all that hair. He would really be, he would have something to say now for sure. So we look at the changes, and some change we have to live with, and some change we get to make some choices about. But here's the deal. The bottom line is, let us look now at the way we are in our own practice of athleticism, our own masterful way we want to apply principle to our own lives so that we can have more success in our lives. So we train and we practice. That's the number one key thing I would say that we have in common. We train, we take classes, we get coaching, and then we are encouraged to practice. If you don't practice any of this, if you're only getting it from a book or in a heady way, then you're not really using it in the way that practical spirituality is intended to be used, in the way that it can impact our lives. We set goals and intentions. The athlete wants to do well, perhaps even win or shine or win a medal or a ring or something. We learn how to visualize success. And athletes are big into visualization these days. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then we, as I mentioned, we take that effort to study the law so that we can stay within the rules of the game. Because, you know, in football, or baseball, they break a rule, they get penalized. But what happens in our life? If we break one of the natural spiritual laws, a rule of nature, you know, if you do something that isn't in conformity to gravity, for instance, there's a consequence that we get quite quickly when we fall out of bounds of following the natural laws. So we have these great things in common, and the beautiful thing is that it is in a way, if you look at it like the parallel, It is a way in which we are playing the game of life. And the thing about the spiritual path is that it's not, you know, the season's never over for us. We get to come out fresh every day, and we play the game of life. In 1925, Florence Scovel Shinn released a book by that name, The Game of Life and How to Play It, in 1925. And that is still a popular book, a well-read book, and she is one of considered one of the brilliant faces of metaphysics or New Thought in those earlier days. My mom and dad were born in 1925, so I know that was a while ago. So this idea of spiritual practice and learning how to play the game is a vital information that can serve us in a really beautiful and positive way. And it's sort of the whole point of what we teach here, which is why I like an opportunity to have a playful way of presenting it to you. Ernest Holmes, again, the founder of this philosophy, had this idea that once we discover that power within us, such a different way of looking at spirituality. Are you watching belief? I understand they're gonna do a marathon of it. Belief is a one-hour show that Oprah has done. It's there's seven of them all together, and we have recorded them, and I'm just nursing myself watching. You know, I'm trying not to watch more than one a night. They're so beautiful, and it is extraordinarily aligned to what we teach, and it is a little peek of all the different ways people practice spirituality in their own lives, including some very religious people. If we would watch more of that type of show, I think we would soften in the way we view other religions, and we would be even more open and accepting and see that everywhere there is truth and everywhere there is beauty, and it is individuals that make choices that maybe do not look so beautiful. But overall, to condemn a faith is not what it's not what we are for. We are born of great truths from all spiritual traditions, and we're quite proud of that. So anyhow, if you get a chance to capture any of that, you want to see that. It's really fabulous. So Holmes said that as we figure this stuff out, it begins to empower us because we see that there's nothing in the universe that can keep us separated from that power. That is, of course, except yourself. Except ourselves. We are the only reason that we get disconnected from that power. Nobody can take it away from us. It is a matter of us learning about it, believing that it's possible to use that power. That's what we talked about last Sunday, and sort of try it. You might like it, you know, sort of that theme that is a great overall theme of what we speak about here. Ernest Holmes, in that same book, chapter 11 of The Art of Life, said this: if you continue in this practice long enough, you will find yourself emerging. And you will find that you have freedom. You have freedom to be unhappy, but you also have freedom to convert your unhappiness into joy. Wow. See, this is what we mean when we talk about the way we limit ourselves. Our experience of limitation in any way comes only from the way that we use or don't use that power, because none of us are born without it. It is also true that all the great spiritual rules and truths and principles in the world will be of no avail to you if you do not actively use them. And practice is the best way to get good at doing that. Now, last week we talked about prayer, we talked about words, and we talked about being intentional with your words, and I even suggested that we find a way to quit being so fear-based in how we approach this idea of how we use our words. So Ernest Holmes said, the quote I used last week was that we empower our words by making conscious and intentional use of the words we choose. We give our words meaning, and in fact, he says, and I agree, that words without meaning have no power. That's why we don't need to be superstitious about the way we speak. We need to be smart and pay attention to how we speak, and especially to how we think when nobody's hearing what's going on inside our minds, because there's great power when we are intentional and when we use our word in a positive way, when we're seeking to tap into that higher thought. We are now breaking down any obstructions and we are pushing through to the other side. Oh, that would be a great topic too. I'm not going to sing. I want to. Anybody know where I went? To the other side. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No. Moving on. So, and by the way, Chris Lockman, thank you. I was on Facebook yesterday, and our center's Facebook page, wvcsl.facebook.com or something. Can you say it? Mark? Just go to Facebook and type in WVCSL and it'll probably come up just like that. Or type in the whole name. But wow, Chris put a phenomenal amount of information from last week's talk that has a ton of quotes. Now, Chris Lockman and Mark Reed have learned how to do those memes. Is that what you call them, memes? And they are taking quotes. They're taking great quotes from Holmes and others. And they're putting them on top of those pictures. You know, you're seeing that everywhere these days. On Facebook, I see them a lot. But here's what I want to tell you. There are some great quotes, and there's a lot of them. And if you play on Facebook, you should really go and like every quote you like. Every time you hit like, it's good advertising for the center. Every time you share, it multiplies that. So you see a quote that you like, and there's even a couple from me. I don't know how you do that, but there, if you share those quotes and blast it out to people that are your friends with, it also then grows the exposure of the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, and that's a good thing. So thank you very much, both of you, for the work that you do in keeping that gorgeous and keeping it alive. Chris recently sent me statistics, and our stats or our numbers are just going up and up and up on how many hits we get and visits and shares and likes. So I want to talk for just a minute on the practice, the spiritual practice of visualization. Visualization is something we talk about in the foundation class. It is indeed one of the many spiritual practices that we promote, teach, recommend, and it's not new. People have been doing it for a long, long time, but in the world of sports, it's become a big part of training athletes. And what we know is, people like Phil Jackson has been, he's the first example that came up in everything I Googled. He's a good example of using visualization with basketball players in the way that you have them sit down, and part of their training is a discipline of imagining shooting baskets and making baskets and being effective on the floor, on the basketball court. And he has taken many teams to great success because he so emphasizes this act of visualization. But you know, golfers do it. Jack Nicklaus has spoken about it forever and ever. You just know you're gonna just do the right hit on the you're gonna putt that ball right in the hole. Mary Lou Retton has a practice of visualization, an hour-long visualization before she performs so that she sees her body attuned to all the gorgeous things she wants to do as a gymnast. And all of these people and so many more use this idea of mental imagery so that you get a mental picture in your head. Now, here's what I want you to hear. This is no longer words. We are taking the words, we talked about this last week too, we're taking the words and creating a mental image which your mind can relate to in a greater way and thereby have a real response to in your physical being. And in many cases, the research they've done, the visualization of practicing for something is almost as effective as the actual physical practice. Really impressive information we have now. So it's a way that we turn our words into images by focusing on the different senses and the way we would experience that. So I found this guy on the internet named Craig Townsend who trains swimmers. And this is what he says to swimmers, and this is the part you can really use. He says, use all your senses. Imagine that you're seeing the swimming pool, the other swimmers, the plants that might be around the outside of the enclosed area. See all the color you can and see it as real as you can. Smell the chlorine in the pool. Hear the sounds of the people that are cheering you on. But most of all, feel the joy of the victory within you. If you do this every day for around 5 minutes, you will gradually notice a shift in your confidence. So I like that. I like that idea that whatever it is that you're working on in your own life, whether it's a project or an interview for a new job, it doesn't matter what it is. If we spend time using our senses to see it as if it's real, to taste it and smell it and hear it and all the details that we can conjure in our mind, it's a powerful thing. I used to teach this stuff in the communications class that I taught for 16 or 17 years to teenagers and their parents. And when I would come to this night where we would teach visualization so that they could accomplish better communication within their family, better relationships with each other in their family, I would always give an example. They told us you have to have an example. But what I noticed was every example I would use, I would manifest. Now, I was not in this teaching yet, so I didn't have that kind of language for it. But I knew it was really fun, so I would accomplish something and I would scratch it off my list. And it started with humble stuff. You know, one year I just talked about how badly I needed to shampoo the rugs. You know, I started with the humble, just the basic stuff that I knew would give me great pleasure. And when I scratched that off, I went, well, I need to think of something more, something greater. And I worked my way up through the years until one day I said, I want to go to Stonehenge. I want to go to England and I want to see Stonehenge. And so I would stand before that class and I would describe what that was like and I would talk about. And so I'm imagine packing my bags and I'm going to have warm clothes because I can see that it's going to be misty, maybe even a little rainy on the day that I go, and it's going to be very green. I can imagine myself in the airplane crossing the Atlantic Ocean. Now, in these days, I had not traveled anywhere yet, so this was a big stretch for me. I took pictures of it, and I played with pictures of it. I just tried to embody the experience, and one day, while I was teaching that class, I had to scratch that off my list because I actually made it to Stonehenge. So, yeah, this stuff works. The reason visualization is so powerful is that it fits in with that idea of the law of reciprocal action. It is done unto you as you believe. And if you can convince your physical being that it is already done, and you go to that place and celebrate that experience again and again, eventually you are going to be crossing that off your list of goals or things to accomplish because you're going to do it. So let's do that. Now, the important part of that quote from Craig Townsend was the end, I think. When he talked about, so he tells all his swimmers, so sit for 5 minutes every day, that's all. Sit for 5 minutes and visualize what it is that you desire. You will gradually notice a shift in your confidence. What if we apply that to our own lives in the most simple way? I have this idea. What if we, all of us, sat for 5 minutes before we left the house every day? 5 minutes, that's all. You could set a timer. And we sat for 5 minutes and we visualized ourselves playing in the world, whatever it is, whether you're going to the market or the doctor's office or on a great adventure. and you imagined the details of what it would be like to have every encounter, every person you encounter, you would have a loving encounter, that you would experience kindness, that you would have joy, and that you would be, you know what mine would be? It would be to be just be comfortable in my own shoes. I'd be more comfortable in different shoes today, but that to be comfortable, you know, with yourself, to have that confidence with yourself. 5 minutes. If you did that for 5 minutes every day, if we just visualized visualize what you'd want your day to be like, but you do it using all your senses like that. You see the people, you just make them up, right? You see, you smell the smells. You imagine the experience of touch and whatever it is you're going to encounter in that kinesthetic way during your day. And we just use that 5 minutes to dedicate ourselves to joy or beauty, to be able to see beauty and experience that. See, that's what life is about. That's why visualization is so powerful and effective, because it is done unto us as we believe. And the key in it is that you do it until you feel it, both emotionally and physically in your being. So, you know, be patient. Just try it. We'll have a little experiment. We'll have a group experiment. We'll talk about it after Thanksgiving. Ooh, that's what we could do. We could start visualizing a beautiful, peaceful Thanksgiving that's gratifying and loving and easy and delicious, and that none of us overeat. So I want to talk for just a moment on another spiritual practice that's a lot like visualization. It's contemplation. But what's different about contemplation is it's the same idea that you get away from the words, you get away from the intellectual understanding because you desire to have a deeper understanding of something. Now, contemplation is another important practice we encourage in this teaching. And Ernest Holmes used contemplation in a great way in his own life. He would always begin, when he was going to have a contemplative practice, he would go into nature. He would go sit in the woods, and he would just contemplate what was there. And he would recognize the presence of something greater than he was, and he would just contemplate that. What is it? He asked himself every day, what is God? Not who is God. What is God? What is my connection? And he would open himself to have that opportunity for communion. And then he would come home after contemplating God in nature. He would go home and he would read something sacred. And he liked to read the Bible, but he read a lot more than just the Bible. We know he read Emerson. We know he read a lot of poetry. He loved a lot of great works of literature. And so he would read. He also loved other sacred writings. So then he would sit and he would read and he would contemplate. Now, the difference is you're not reading to read the words. You know, like I have read the Bible cover to cover because I used to be a fundamentalist, not really because I wanted to then, but that's reading. That's only in your head. When I take a passage from Scripture and I contemplate it, now I have this opportunity to embody it, or it embodies me. It's like it penetrates us, you know? And so there's a way when we're contemplating that we also have to sort of relax into it. If you're a great meditator, you already know this stuff. But contemplation, I see contemplation as the way we commune with life itself. So if you want to understand anything more deeply, we're invited to hold it in our mind until it's not words, it's not even thoughts, but it becomes an idea. This is where I think we tap into the divine imagination, and there's nothing better than that. And so it becomes a way where we access that natural wisdom within us. Really great way to contemplate it. Bless your day. Wake up in the morning and bless your day, and then figure out what it is you want to do. I'm not emphasizing prayer today because it's a given that prayer, frequent pray. You know what I say? Pray often, love much. And, you know, it's the whole package. So these are great, great practices that are powerful and can be life-changing for us as we are playing this game of life, not to satisfy a goal to get to the end of life with, you know, a certain attitude or the right number of toys or whatever. It's not that. Life is day to day. It's living this stuff purposefully. So we want to be athletic in our spiritual practice. We want to use these tools, and there are so many more tools, and we'll be offering more classes again as the fall winds down and we get ready for winter. Pay attention to what kind of classes we'll be offering. I'll be teaching foundation again. Even if you've had it, it's always powerful to take it again. And that is the class in which we examine these spiritual practices. So let's push back the negative thoughts. Let's cease to participate in negative activities and practices. Let's be intentional in our desire to experience more joy and to appreciate more beauty and to be able to tap into that power that is naturally ours. Let's be vigorous in our commitment to training. Because when we do, when we convince ourselves with that great noble conviction, our lives do change indeed. So let's just take a moment to anchor these ideas in prayer right now. So I would invite you to turn within, to not be distracted by Nancy's blinking necklace, and just feel the joy in this day where we can dress up and wear costumes and feel that essence of life. I'm not hearing my music. Is there someone in the booth? Let's just feel that joy and know that that joy is yet another quality of God. I feel the love of God right here in this room right now. And I know that it is that which is eternal. It is the infinite intelligence of all the universe. It is the perfection of our being and every living thing. I feel the love of God. I know that it is that power and that presence that is right here, right now. I recognize that love within me, and I recognize that love at the very center of every living being in this room and outside of this room and beyond the sound of this voice. There is only that activity of life, spirit itself. And so as we align ourselves to this great and beautiful truth, that all there is love, that there is a way to train our minds and to study spiritual laws and to align ourselves to that power within. I recognize that there is this great gift of prayer, and as we speak our words intentionally into that law, into that power right now, we can just feel that shift occurring. It is the movement of consciousness that allows us to return to truth, to open ourselves to the divine guidance, the light and the love, the truth of all of life. And so as we recognize that which is divine right here, right now, it sparks something within us, like a kindling to a tiny flame that now erupts into a greater, beautiful glow, the flame of life itself, that place where all healing is delivered from. And as we remember to return to that truth, to this great divine knowledge, we return ourselves to that state of perfection, that memory of our wholeness and our connection and our communion with God itself. And so I know there is a healing going on this day. I know that it is revealed even as we come in costumes, that nothing can disguise the greater truth of who we are and whose we are. That we are one with Spirit Almighty, and therefore it is the inherent nature of God itself to gift us with the grace of heaven streaming into our lives even now. So wherever there is an appearance of any limitation of any sort whatsoever, I simply know that as we shift our vision, we recognize the fullness of God, the fullness of potential, of all the possibility, and we remember that in God all things are possible. So I say thank you, life. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for all these blessings, for our ability to reap the great reward of this spiritual practice, this training, this spiritual community. We are blessed abundantly, and I am so grateful. And in this spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I just release the words of this prayer into that law that can only affirm positively. We have broken through the obstructions. We stand fully open to life. I say, thank you, God. I let it be. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.